I'm Graham Sibley.
I'm Jan Bilton.
I'm Terry DeFellin.
And this is The Sound of Football. Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Sound of Football. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual I'm joined by Terry DeFellin and Jan Bilton. And what a great week of football it was. What a great weekend. Terry, it was a weekend of great first half performances, wasn't it?
Was it? What happened?
Yeah, well, your own team.
Oh, yes, they won. That was brilliant. Match of QPR.
3-0 up at half time.
Yeah, that's true. That was marvellous, that was.
Yeah. Even a fullback scored, didn't he?
Joel Ward scored his first ever goal for Crystal Palace. Joel Ward is, I think he's a bit of a cult figure at Selhurst Park.
Right.
He is actually a very competent left back, in my right back, yes. Full back, in my opinion. And he's, but he's not a spectacular player. He's a much more of a traditional fullback, you know, in the traditional sense. In that he doesn't get forward all that much. Quite a solid defender, doesn't score many goals. Reminds me of a fullback we used to have, a guy called John Humphreys. Mm. Used to be a bit like that. Unspectacular, but reliable. And in fairness, something of a rarity, because you don't get many sort of like good, solid fullbacks, because they all want to be, you know, they all want to be Roberto Carlos, don't they? So, but he scored, and that was a wonderful moment. I must confess, I don't cheer and jump around as much as I used to as when I was a younger man. So when I see Palace score, I go sort of, you know, hurrah for our side. And apart from when Joel Ward scored, and I jumped through the ceiling, it was a wonderful moment. And it's always good to beat Queen's Park Rangers, because nobody likes Queen's Park Rangers.
Is that a Palace thing, or is that just a general?
I assume it's a Palace thing. I think it's a supporter of another London club thing. And I imagine it's the same with Palace. We're one of those. They're this kind of mid-range, not too small to be ignored.
Isn't there some Terry Venables nonsense though, right, as well? There with those two.
Yes, there is some Terry Venables nonsense associated, but I won't bore the listeners about that.
I'm sure the internet could serve them well there.
Yeah, but I think they are one of those clubs that a lot of people just see them as not being, even though it's a derby game, you don't get excited about playing QPR. I would imagine that they feel exactly the same about us.
Mm. Yes, I'm sure they do.
They do quite well against us, though. Everyone does quite well against us.
Yes,
well,
we're going to talk about that in a minute, aren't we?
I was talking about good first half performances, and then you've almost spot the surprise there, haven't you?
Oh man!
Yeah, I was going to go through Man United going 3-0 up against Tottenham, and then to trump them all, Aston Villa went 4-0 up.
Man United did do very well yesterday. I did watch that game.
They did do very well. It was actually I don't know if they did very well or if Tottenham just, like, you know, forgot to turn up. I mean, like, yeah. Where was the decent team that played us a few weeks ago? Nowhere to be seen.
They have a reputation for not turning up at Old Trafford, don't they, Tottenham?
Yeah, they went many years without winning there. And I think they only just got over that a couple of years ago, didn't they? But I think they've gone back into their back up bad old habits. I do remember them going up there once on the last day of the season. I think it was back in 99, I think it was, when Arsenal needed to win. And they needed Tottenham to do them a favour.
Mm.
And Tottenham wouldn't. And they went a goal up. Les Ferdinand scored accidentally.
I remember that game. Yeah, I remember that game.
Les Ferdinand scored accidentally. Looked mortified that he put Tottenham up. And then they properly rolled over and died quite obediently for Man United to win.
Normal service resumed in due course.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that was another good first half performance. Were there any others that we can think of off the top of our heads?
Aston Villa against Sunderland, which you know, really it was looking a bit worrying a few weeks ago when Sunderland put a few results together, because I thought, you know, like we have our regular mock draws every couple of years, mm-hmm. we also have our advent calendar. Every December,
without fail.
Yeah, at the start of the year, you know, we also have the clip show as well. That's another staple. And ever since Jan's been coming on the podcast, every March we have a who's going to be the new manager of Sunderland show. Mm. And, you know, luckily, it's fallen in our lap. It's this week.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty good, isn't it? It's always a couple of weeks before the clocks go forward.
Well, it's the way I remember.
Spring forward, fall back, Sunderland news and that. There's a rhyme in there somewhere.
Yeah.
There's got to be a rhyme in there somewhere.
Are you surprised, Dan?
I was thinking on my way here tonight that a few weeks ago, I think one of you asked me, do you think you'd be all right with Gus Poyer? And I remember saying at the time, yeah, I'll be fine. He's got too much quality. And I'm also saying that as well, just so, just to flag it for the clip show as well. just throwing that out there.
We always need stuff for the clip show.
Always need stuff for the clip show. But when I... when, you know, the horrible 45 minutes that just kept popping up on my phone with alerts, it just seemed like they were constant. I just thought, this is too much now. There's no way that the fans at the board or anyone's going to cope with this now or put up with this now. And I think that he'll get sacked. And yes. I don't think I saw the future. I think anybody had anything to do with football there was probably thinking the same thing at about 4:15 on Saturday, that he was gone. And there were some really horrible, ugly scenes, which I think hammered that home. If there was any doubt in the owner's mind on Sunday afternoon whether he needed to, Saturday afternoon, whether he really needed to replace the manager, I think those scenes of, you know, half of a 46,000-seater stadium leaving en masse and flinging, you know, all of their, you know, their memorabilia onto the pitch and walking off in disgust, because it was a horrible capitulation. But it was only one game, you could argue, but it's been a long time coming. I mean, I'd forgotten all about it. erased it from my mind, but of course we got beat 8-0 in October from Southampton. Queen's Park Rangers hadn't done anything, as I mentioned earlier, until they came to Sunderland. And, you know, he had 18 months in charge, did really well to keep us up last season. But, you know, as the statement from the club said today, there's been no progress made from that date. So, you know, it wasn't really a surprise, really. And I think, you know, it would have been worse to delay and to not take a bold decision. So, yeah, I think it was definitely coming, but it was pretty horrible how quickly it all happened. I mean, it can't be very nice for him as a person either.
So who do you think is going to take over then?
Well,
that's a big question.
Dick Avocat is being touted as being the chap who's going to take over in the interim. And then there's a whole host of other names, from Steve McLaren to...
Brian Laudrup's on there, isn't
Brian
it?
Brian Laudrup, yeah, that'd be pretty good. Apparently very difficult to work with.
Yeah, I was having a look at the list earlier, and it's interesting. You don't even have to go down too far before names like Martin O'Neill, Alan Kirbishley, Ian Dowie, and
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's got to be on there.
Yeah, he always is. I saw those names that I just mentioned there, and I thought, oh my God, it's 2004 again, isn't it? So we've not got more people on the list by now. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he was on there as well.
Was he really? I was just a...
Of course he is. He's got to be.
That's just my standard joke I roll out when we talk about managers getting sacked. He's got to be on there. He's always on there, isn't he?
Actually, let's see. He's got a long way down, if he is.
His stock's down, isn't he?
Peter Reid's on there before
all that. Peter Reid. That'd be good.
Yeah. Martin Yole's caught 18-1. God dear, where did he come from? Man,
it's interesting actually mentioning Peter Reid, because one of the things that I think started the decline of Poyet was he was criticising the fans for being impatient, and said, it's not like back in Phillips and Quinn's era, you know, when you used to play kick and rush football. You know, you have to be a bit more patient with football these days. I mean, the most patronising thing you can say to a bunch of fans who... And that was our time.
That was,
you know, that was our golden period. It was our golden period. He's like, yeah, it's not like them. It was kick and rush. And everyone's just like, what? Yeah. Who is this joke again? So I think he didn't just lose the dressing room then. I think
telling supporters how to watch football, that's not going to
happen. I don't think
it's not going to endear, is it?
No.
It's not like there are proud people in the North East at all, is it?
It's not like you don't know your football up there. It's not like they don't know what football is up there.
Yeah.
You know, so that anybody who follows a football club for any length of time knows.
One name that has been mentioned on the betting alone. So you can't really take too much of it because you don't know how much people are speculating idiots who are out there like chucking like a grand at a time on people like Mark Warburton, the guy who's serving notice at the moment at Brentford, and who we talked about on this very podcast a couple of weeks ago.
Him of Sound of Football fame, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I don't think. Well, maybe. You never know.
Maybe you never know. Yeah, I mean, like you could be having KPIs up there soon. Sam Allardyce is second on the betting behind.
I would take Sam Allardyce.
I would totally take Sam.
Yeah. West Ham don't.
Yeah, the thing is, well, they don't. Yeah. And if
they're
you
all an ungrateful bunch down that way,
they really are.
Well, as well as that, if you want to not be in a relegation scrap every single season, which is kind of our number one objective at the moment, then Big Sam can steer you away from that. I mean, it will be pretty, and you're not going to win the league, but you know, I'll take finishing mid-table. Comfortably and all been boring, rather than putting up with this every season.
At least for the time being, anyway.
So what is the news about Dick Advocaat? Is it really just like keep us up in the Premier League and then sort off in the summer? Is it all?
Yeah, well, and obviously a massive bonus if he keeps us up. But I think that's what I heard. I mean, it that rumor came out almost as in fact before even the sacking was announced. And it's funny because a lot of my friends in Sunderland all seem to know somebody who knows somebody who's very close to a source that was dentist of Dick Advocaat, and apparently he's on a plane coming over and he's taking training tomorrow. But it's you know, either I've got a lot of very, very well connected friends, or
you've got a lot of people who consider themselves
well connected. Yeah, well I don't connected. Think I've got a lot of well connected friends. I think I've just got a lot of friends that read tabloid newspapers.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, he's got a bit of a pedigree behind him, though, hasn't he?
He's
done some stuff.
He's won
some football matches.
He's not rubbish. Yeah. I think he's got a reasonably high media presence as well.
He's Dutch as well, so very
trendy.
Yeah, very trendy.
Like a good Dutch coach.
I don't know. I mean, like obviously, yes, because Van Gaal is obviously now in charge of a team that are now title contenders.
Well, he knows what he's doing now.
After one weekend of a good result.
Last weekend, not so much. Yeah. This weekend, very definitely.
Oh, yeah. He's back in favour again.
And there's Ronald Koeman as well, who's... hugely respected figure. Although, I mean, still, the jury is actually, believe it or not, out on Koeman's abilities as a coach. It won't surprise you to learn, is given what's happening at Southampton. But there are those who perhaps think that that's just a very well-run club, and that any sort of half-decent coach would do a fairly decent job there. But yeah, there seems to be. We do like our Dutch coaches. We like our Dutch influence in England. So Dick Advocaat will be a good thing. I would like to ask you a question about your sporting director, and I would wonder whether or not perhaps it is he who should be sacked as well, because one assumes he's had some influence over the malaise at Sunderland. He's obviously signed some crap players by the sound of things. Maybe he should be booted out, and they should get someone in who knows what someone else in.
I think even last night there was a bit of spin being released from the club, because all of a sudden there was all of the flak was being directed on to our ex-manager, and all of the signings being made by the sporting director, Lee Congerton, were suddenly kind of all forgotten. So there were some signings that Poyet insisted on coming through, Bridcut and Buckley from Brighton. And Defoe at the end there. But I mean, I don't think anyone can comment on Defoe yet. He's only played a few games. But then there's a whole host of other players that were brought in by the sporting director. But then there was apparently a whole host of those that were vetoed by Poyet, saying you can bring him in if you want, but I just won't play them. Right. So there was a broken relationship there anyway.
Yeah, it's not going
to
work.
No, it's not. So I think there was a lot going on behind the scenes that was only starting to come out of late. So you could well be right. It could well be that either the sporting director isn't right for the club, or that setup isn't right for the club.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe it's too soon for someone to
probably,
try that.
They probably need an enlightened despot to come in, and a manager, and a traditional English manager to come in and manage and do both. I think.
Yeah.
I do think that I'm a great one for sporting director and coaches, but you do have to do it right. And you have to have a good relationship between the sporting director and the coach, otherwise it doesn't work. And I won't name any, but there are plenty of examples where that relationship breaks down and the results are just the same as they are over here.
Mm.
You know, defeats and chaos, crap signings, and years before it all gets repaired. So
yeah.
It must be done right. So I suspect Sunderland probably need to have the more I think about Sam Allardyce, the better I think he'd be suited up there. I think it would be quite good because he probably an opportunity. You'd definitely win the derby games because it would make that, you know, your number one priority. And also West Ham don't need a, you know, I mean, they don't, I think that they don't, I don't think they need much of an excuse to say goodbye. I mean, he's done a great job with them, but his style and his approach, I think, doesn't sit well with the perceived culture of the club and the way that they think things should be done. You could imagine him, if Sunderland stay up, you could imagine him leaving West Ham and maybe going to Sunderland if Dennis Short was to make it worth his worthwhile, and maybe Dave Golden, David Sullivan's while as well.
Mm. I don't think that will happen while the club is married to the idea of a sporting director.
I suspect you're right. Yeah. Well, no, he would, because Big Sam would say, we're not having any of this.
Yeah, I'm in charge here. Absolutely.
And I will make the signings.
And I think that'll just.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just going to say that would just recreate exactly the disquiet that you know existed until this morning. So I think they'll go for another kind of tracksuit manager, if you like. I think if Avrikar's the man for the interim, then he kind of fits into that. And then I don't know there's a few of them around that could maybe fit in. I suppose it's just a case of they just want to preserve that structure. They seem to think it's going to bring them success. It hasn't so far, so we'll have to wait and see how it works.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't imagine they'd be hiring someone permanently at the moment, because I think the last two people have come in and been told to perform a miracle, and then the following season they've been actually, yeah, we don't need you anymore.
Yeah. Well, the March curse, beware the Ides of March. Eh?
Exactly.
Best thing to do, bring them in until the summertime and then make a decision and recruit then. And that is the time, because if you do sack someone every year, then it's best to sack them in the summertime, because then you've got the close season.
How do you think Sunderland can cope with another season where they're struggling to stay up again and struggling to hold on to, or losing belief in a manager? Is it going to be a question of maybe a season down in the Championship might be better for them than having another season of struggling?
I think we've seen enough struggling in my time supporting Sunderland that I'd probably take a season in the Premier League struggling. But I think the answer to your question is you saw what, I don't know if you saw the fans walking out.
Yeah.
And that was a capacity crowd. Mm. So to see half of them leave,
yeah,
not even before half time. And I think the stewards weren't even expecting it, so they were like, well, you can't, we haven't opened the gates yet. So I think there was a real kind of conflict where they were going, you can't leave. And there was a lot of people that were just, no, we're leaving.
I don't believe you can stop us from leaving.
So I think that's said it already. I think that answers your question. The fans warned and proved that they're not going to put up with that level of ineptitude, really. And I think, you know, had he been left in charge, we would have gone to West Ham on Saturday, been turned over, then gone to Newcastle at Easter and just been destroyed.
Yeah. You're going on Saturday, aren't you?
I am going to West Ham. So it'll be quite interesting, because if
you've got to see Sam, won't you?
I might see Big Sam, yeah.
Fantastic. And you can scout Kevin Nolan, Kevin will surely follow. I think if Sunderland get relegated, it'll be a disaster for him, because I think it's a disaster for any long-term club. I mean, look at where Fulham are now. They've been up. I mean, they're not as big a club by any means as Sunderland, but the financial drop off is just so colossal.
Well,
yeah. The days where, you know, yeah, I'll send them down for a year, it will do them some good. I mean, those days are over.
Yeah.
Really, that's the real panic that's afflicted Aston Villa and even Everton. Mm. This season, isn't it? Really?
Yeah. I mean, Everton. Yeah, I mean, yeah,
Everton have skirted with it a few times.
They haven't. Yeah, they seem to. They have in the past had terrible seasons
and then gone
a good season
and then qualified for the Champions League next.
And maybe that's what's happening here, or maybe Martinez is not as good as people say he is. Because I guess it depends on how you contextualise it. But it could be
the fact that he's actually giving the Europa League a go, and that sounds like it's suicide for any sort of ambitions.
But if you want to, but if you win the Europa League, you qualify for the Champions League.
Mm.
So it's a big deal. Of course, if you win the Europa League and get relegated and qualify for the Champions League, you're going to look a bit foolish. These are things worth taking out. This is why suddenly I perceive the Italian clubs seem to be taking the Europa League a little bit more seriously this season than they have done in the past because of that spot there. But to return to the original point, yeah, I know, I think it would be utterly disastrous for Sunderland, having been in the Premier League for as many years as they have been, to be relegated. And I don't think you can rely on them to go straight back up, because the upheaval, the players would have to kick out, and I don't think it would be very good for him at all.
Yeah, I think that it's clear that that's what Ellis Short and his advisors and his colleagues are thinking, because they take these decisions every March because they don't want to face the possibility of their investment going down the Swanee for a season in the Championship. And you know, he's fairly close to the club in that he's invested a lot of time and money in it, but you know, he's a Texan businessman. If you know, he's not going to be afraid to cut his losses and you know, and get on his horse.
Yeah. Firing six shooters in the air. Yeehaw!
He'll be like that fellow from The Simpsons with the hat. Yeah.
That's exactly what he's like.
That is Ellis Short.
Yeah, that is Ellis Short.
Yeah. I think that would that is a danger. I think that he perhaps also has to take some. I mean, I think in one respect he's got a right to ask people at that club what the hell they're playing at, but at the same time I think he probably should reflect on his own decision.
What am I playing at?
What incarnation am I?
Well, he.
What incarnation am I playing at?
Something
like that. Anyway,
Consarni.
That's exactly how he talked. It was almost like he was in the room. But he, to be fair, he swallowed his pride over the Lidicaga thing. And just said, you know, I got that wrong, and he was really open about it. And so, you know, it seems like he's got the best interest of the club at heart. But at the same time, he's, you know, he's got investment in it, and he's not going to let that. You know, he's going to try and minimise the risk attached to his investment, which is possible. So he's taking these tough decisions. You know,
I wonder how much money he's made out of Sunderland, if anything.
There could be another American owner in the Premier League soon, with Palace drawing ever closer to a new owner.
Yeah, I don't know a great deal about this.
Right.
I haven't read that much about it, but apparently it's very close.
Yes, yeah. So I think a lot more interest, especially with the new money deal, that people will be looking after their investment perhaps a bit more. And if you know, Ellis Short hasn't taken money out of it just now, he might still be thinking, well, hang about, this is still something worth being in with
definitely
all this new money just about to start sloshing around.
And of course there's the money that he spent, which he doesn't want to, you know, lose. I mean, and he would flush it down the lavvy if they're relegated. This Palace thing is a bit of a weird one. It went off the boil, but does appear to be back on, and I wonder whether or not perhaps the new TV deal
has
livened things up. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about it at the moment. I'll have to reflect upon it a little bit more. I don't like the idea of it, but I couldn't tell you why at this point.
Yeah, I think the thing is about American owners, there's not been that great experience of clubs being owned by Americans. I mean, although, you know, Man United disliked the Glazers quite a lot, but, I mean, they did have quite a lot of success under them. But I suppose Randy Lerner is someone who's coming for a lot of criticism.
And Hicks and Gillette at Liverpool.
Yes.
People think of. Yeah, I don't think it's because they're necessarily Americans. I think from my point of view, it's more a question of I like Palace's ownership structure as it is.
Yeah.
And I can't help but notice that they are, you know, are quite stable at the moment, Premier League club, and therefore wonder to, you know, to what extent it's necessary for the additional investment.
I wonder if in some measure it's because just the vocabulary of American owners jars a little with the British public.
Yeah, it could be. I think it could be some of that.
It does often have the sort of terms of branding and cultural franchise
yeah. Markets, branding. These are words you tend to associate with American entrepreneurial spirit, yes. Which is rubbish, of course, because it's not. But
it's not.
There is a perception, at least. Yeah. But yes, I think there's a.
And they're words that people don't like to hear involved with football clubs.
You want to hear clubs.
Yes.
You want to hear community.
Yes.
You want to hear support.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You don't want to hear
interest
franchise.
Fans.
You don't want to hear business.
No.
And you don't want to hear customers.
No.
These are not words you want to hear.
You don't want to be treated like a customer, do you?
No. Supporters, not customers. That's the whole thing.
You don't want to be treated as well as a customer, do you? You're a football fan, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I expect far worse than this.
Right, so.
I expect service with a scowl. That's the Premier League now, of course, officially isn't all it's cracked up to be. So says Sky spokesman Jamie Carragher.
Jamie Carragher, yeah. Was he breaking ranks there, do you think? Or do you think that, in fact, it's a backhanded swipe at the fact that they're no longer carrying the Champions
League? Well, this was immediately after Chelsea's exit last week against Paris Saint-Germain. And you know, you don't want to be the sort of person that sees, you know, duplicity everywhere, but you do wonder how they allowed him to say that and still let him have his job. Because if he'd said it after Super Sunday, if he'd said it after you know, Man United Tottenham, and said, well, we've been building that one up all week, and it was a real you know, Tottenham didn't show up, and Tottenham were crap, weren't they?
Yeah.
You know, you did think he wouldn't be there next Sunday, would he?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Yeah, maybe, I mean, maybe there are less editorial constraints with the Champions League coverage for Sky, because they know that it's going at the end of the season.
Yeah, they're just serving notice, aren't they, on this?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Oh, right, you've got a BT subscription to watch Champions League. Oh, you don't know your shit, by the way.
Yeah. By the way, Champions League's rubbish. Yeah. Always has been.
Yeah.
I thought you said the Premier League's not what's cracked up.
No. But he's saying that. He's saying that because of the way the Premier League teams play in Europe.
I see.
You see?
Yeah, so he's talking about English teams in Europe are no longer as good as they were in Europe.
Sorry, I'm a little sore here.
But I think you're right there, because let's face it, I mean, like, they've just shelled out £4.4 billion on this thing that Jamie Carragher, one of their leading pundits, thinks is not all it's cracked up to be. His words, not mine.
Yeah, it was a peculiar thing to say, but I mean, having said that, they've got their money now, so
yeah. You know. I mean, the thing is, as well, it's not anything as well that no one else has been saying. We've been saying it on this very podcast quite a lot, that the fact that, you know, the laughing up our sleeves every time they say the best league in the world.
But Sky are probably
saying that now so much.
Sky are probably entitled, having spent all this money, to say, well, look, actually, it's a bit shit, isn't it? Mm. Maybe they're angling for a lower price.
Discount next time.
And the Premier League probably wouldn't like it, because of course it affects international sales. If the pundits back home are bad mouthing their domestic league, then how does it affect? Does it affect international sales? Does it even register? Does people even care?
And this is the first sign of, like, you know, once Sky have now paid their money, now they're telling the Premier League to buck their ideas, that we paid with this money, we expect something in return now. Spend your money a bit wiser.
The landscape has changed in that respect, and relationships change along with it. So who knows?
I mean, fans wouldn't have any problem complaining to their clubs when they start, you know, not.
No, or no. What, in some instances, they can't leave the stadium quick enough.
Literally, so, can't.
Why not Sky? Now that they paid their money, you know, they expect a product, don't they?
No, they don't want to be seen as customers, though. They want to be seen as supporters of the game.
Oh, yes.
I'm wondering if he'd said that at the stadium event on Saturday afternoon. Premier League's not all it's cracked up to be. I think you would have found a lot of people going, "Yeah, you're damn right. We're off down the pub."
Where's the nearest non-league team?
Can you imagine that the people leaving there, like, you know, the scales falling from their eyes and finding a pub? And actually, spending the afternoon in the pub is really good, isn't it?
Let's just do that.
The beer's quite expensive, but not as expensive as going to that. Yeah.
The beer doesn't taste like swill as it does in the stadium.
Oh, well, yeah, so Jamie Carragher there, telling it like it is. Who knows what gems he'll be coming out with next? We'll have to wait. Sorry you weren't here last week, but there wasn't any hot food after the podcast. So just thought we'd let you know. And on that bombshell, it's time to bring this podcast to a close. From me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and Terry the Fetham, it's goodbye.
Do you know, have we just hit on something there?
What's that?
Jeremy Clarkson needs a new job. Suddenly lost their manager. You need a strong man in there to tell them what's what.
Yeah.
You know.
I thought you were going to suggest that we'll hear.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Join us for another thrilling instalment of Sound of Football Top Trumps. If you remember last time, listeners, you'll know that you, yes, you, won the hand. It was a very, very difficult decision for you, wasn't it, Terry? But unfortunately, Philip Lahm came out and actually snatched the possession of the deck.
Yeah, well, if you're going to lose to anyone, then losing to Philip Lahm is no disgrace.
Yes. Yes. Well, we as ever, when you have command of the pack, listeners, we put it out on Twitter just before we started recording, and Mario Gomez was the card. Mario Gomez! We actually did ask you which attribute you wanted us to play with, and you said, in your droves, career goals. There was only one word of dissent from the listening public who said trophies. And you know, just because I'm feeling English, I think we'll go with that one lone voice for trophies.
Controversial. Are you going to tell the listening public who it was who suggested it?
Who would suggest such a ridiculous thing?
Yes, it was Terry the Fellman.
Regular listener Terry the Fellman.
Regular listener Terry the Fellman.
Nothing in the rule book that says that I can't.
No. So, Terry, tell me, who have you got and how many trophies have they got?
I've got Gareth Bale.
Yes.
And I should point out that this deck is accurate as of 30th of March 2012.
Yes.
And yes, no trophies.
Well played there, Terry. Well played.
Yep.
Join us again next time. Sound of football, top trumps.
Beached by my own guitar there, eh?